Auckland Voice FM.
And a special guest this morning as well. A very warm welcome to the voice of choice, Mr. Greg Maloney. Goeiemorgen.
Goeiemorgen, guys. How's it going?
Oh, jeez. What an absolute pleasure to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here, man. I've spent a bit of time down in the Lowveld on a few occasions. And, yeah, it's certainly one of my favorite parts of the country, particularly if I'm up there on a superbike or on a mountain bike.
Listen, we are totally hungry for motorsport in the Lowveld. There's no racetrack here. I think the closest racetrack that I know of, there's one in Maputo, which is not really accessible to us. So it's Red Star Raceway in Delmas. That's the closest we can get to a racetrack.
No, listen, you've got a world championship motocross track. Remember?
We do. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we do.
Motocross Grand Prix there for 2 years in a row. It was absolutely mind blowing what they did there.
And
I think it's called Alkmaar, I think.
Eh? Alkmaar, yeah, that's right. Alkmaar's still running.
Yeah, that's the one.
And the Lowveld Enduro is also quite big.
Oh, yeah.
Rallies, we've got a couple of rallies. The Sasol Rally, now the York Rally, the last couple of years have been quite a big thing in Nelspruit as well. So, yeah, we do have our fair share of motorsport, but we don't have a track we can go to. We've got the 22, like you mentioned, on a superbike. Yeah.
Sure, hang on a second. It's early in the morning, hey. I'm feeling the need for speed.
Yeah. Well, this is where we can do it. Rudy, you're all about motorbikes. You've got the Buell.
Yeah, no. Don't say that because the Buell's busy calling me. No, you talk this
it's like my GSXR sitting next to me going, when are we going for a ride?
No.
So we cannot have the voice of choice on our show without talking a little bit about commentary. For those... undoubtedly, there would be someone who wouldn't know who Greg Maloney is. Give us a rundown of your commentary career in a nutshell. I know it's difficult, but try.
No, it's incredible to think, and I was actually thinking about it last night as we finished up the second time I've ever done online commentary for an online e-race. And I sat there and I went, jeepers, you know, how long have I been doing this? And Where did it start, and bits and pieces that sort of fell through the cracks, and bits and pieces that have come to mind. And in fact, being in lockdown, you know, I think a lot of people are in the same situation where they've gone and climbed into the garage or climbed into the shed or climbed into the storeroom and literally done a dump session. And yep. In doing that, I pulled out a few little special mementos, which I found and I'm going to be framing and putting into my collection at some point.
Oh, that's
amazing. But yeah, my motorsport career actually started with my dad. My dad was involved with Westbank as their marketing manager and basically put the deal together that sealed Westbank's involvement into South African motorsport for the 38 odd years they were involved.
Wow.
And my dad basically sat in an office with his general manager and director and signed the deal to become what was then the modified saloon car sponsor.
Oh, the V8.
And
yes.
Westbank Modified Saloons was then sort of born.
Westbank Modified Saloons.
And that, and that kind of powered through into what we know as the Westbank V8s. And of course, the V8s then became V8 supercars, and the V8 supercars are now sponsored by Mobil 1. But it's one of the longest standing single sponsorships in South African motorsport history, with Westbank being involved. So,
we grew up watching that. Wow.
Yeah.
We're talking about
that was me.
Larry Wilford. We're talking about Sarel van der Merwe. We're talking about all these racing legends.
Willie Hepburn, Sabbath.
Those are all household
South African motorsport names, you know.
Wow. Willie Hepburn, what's that? That Sabbath record that he still drives today.
The Ford Sierra, I should say. And then he's got the Opel record, which he still drives today. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
So basically from there... Yeah, my dad kind of got me involved in a few little bits and pieces that he used to do being the motorsport manager. And I ended up at Kyle Army on a few occasions because they had Westbank Corner sponsored there, the top of the hill at Leeuwarden, as it's known now. And my sort of love for the sport grew from there. I mean, I'd always been a bike fan and a motocross fan and a Formula One fan. But, of course, when you're at the track and you kind of live the experience and have the opportunity like I had with my dad to get into the pits and meet the drivers and sort of have a hands-on experience. It's sort of the bug bits. And, of course, with motorsport, as you guys know, you're big motorsport fans and motoring fans. Once that bug bites, you're basically stuck for it for the rest of your life.
It's a big problem,
as I said to you guys...
it's tougher to shake than cocaine.
My main focus in terms of my career was I was a BMX, SA BMX champion and SA downhill champion for mountain biking. And the racing blood was there already. So just to put an engine behind it was pretty simple. But of course, when I say budget, the budget was a problem, because when you go and race cars and you go and race motorcycles, it makes it very difficult for most people to be involved in the sport, because it's quite an expensive outing.
It does.
So when I asked my dad to change up from bicycles to cars, he just looked at me and said, "No, you man, I don't have that kind of money." He said, "Why don't you go and have a chat with Roger McCleary?" And of course, I'm sure you guys have had him on your show. And if not, definitely a man you need to have a chat with, because
the
experience that comes from him is spectacular. So for about 3 months, I kind of went to Roger's office and chatted and spoke, and we sort of went back and forth about what to do. And then eventually I got invited to join him and what was then known as the South African Commentators Association, Kyle Army, to jump in for my very first commentary stint. And this was end of 1996.
Wow.
And Roger basically said to me, "Yes," because there were no timing monitors at that stage. We didn't have timing monitors. We didn't have screens to look at. We didn't have outside broadcast other than when we went live for big events. And he said to me, "Well, here's a piece of paper. That's the 9 production cars in Class A. Here's the 17 in Class B. It's raining. And there's the microphone. We'll see you later. We're going to go and make the bra."
Going out for
out the room.
Oh, jeez.
And literally walked out the room. So, a bit of a baptism of fire, but in the rain kind of thing.
Like, I have the utmost respect for commentators, especially good ones. The amount of information that you have to process, you're in control or in charge or have the responsibility of the mood. That's being, you know, the unforeseen circumstances. The amount of information that you have to sort of digest and give through to the general public who's listening. You have to not insult the guys who know a little bit about racing, but also bear in mind that there might be someone who's watching a race for the first time, and you don't want to bore them with so much technicality. There's a balance you need to strike, and that's something that I feel the Voice of Choice has perfected over the last, 23 years?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Sure, we. There have been occasions where I've got it wrong, and there's a few prime examples of where people have come up, and they're very quick to sort of hit you when you make a mistake, but they fail to realize how much you can add as a commentator towards them and their sponsors.
So take us through a typical race. Let's call something. Let's call it the supercars. You know, the guys like the Porsches and the Ferraris and everything, like the more exciting races. Yeah, take us through a typical race morning. How do you record it? Do you do it afterwards? Is it live while the race is on? How are the recordings done for the broadcasts?
Well, there's three options that they basically play with at the moment. One, of course, is the live stream, which then goes out onto social media. We don't normally have anything live on television at a national championship level, because it just costs too much money to be on a channel like SuperSport or on SABC. They just the budgets are just astronomical, and unfortunately, with the sponsors that are involved, they're more concerned about their competitors and what their needs are than worrying about trying to get onto, you know, a national broadcaster. Although that would be the ideal. I mean, that's how it used to be done in the old days.
Yes,
but what we normally do is I will arrive at a circuit, whether it's at Red Star or Kyle Army, Swartkops, Cape Town, wherever we're going to be racing. I normally arrive there the day before, spend the day sort of going in between all the drivers, catching up with friends, catching up with competitors, catching up with news that might have happened in between the race meetings that we've had. Any new competitors, of course, getting some details and information about them. In the old days, I used to sort of carry a notepad around with me, but of course, after 23 years, it's relatively easy to sort of work out how to make a relationship between, let's say, Valentino Rossi and 46 and his sponsor and that and that and that. So
yes,
you kind of put that all together, and it just sort of stays in your head. Sometimes it only comes out about 3 or 4 weeks later, and that's when we do the live recording of what would be the television package. But on the day, it's basically a bit of information grabbed on the Friday. Saturday morning, get there to do the warm-up and qualifying. We don't normally commentate the warm-up and qualifying sessions, although some categories do like to have it. But it all depends on sort of the crowd and how big the crowd is that are there. And then it's straight into racing. And, of course, the racing in South Africa is not really big or large laps that are competed in most national championship races, unless you're in the endurance championship.
Yeah.
But the sprint races are between 8 to 12 laps, depending on what circuit they're at. So you get through the day relatively quickly. The prize-giving ceremony happens, and then you kind of wait about a week or a week and a half for the television production to give me a call. And then when I get that call, we go in and we do it's a live voice, as if we're live at the circuit, but it's a highlight reel. So it's basically all the action that happens without any of the boring stuff that happens in between. Oh, they try and keep the racing as exciting as we can. And the cool thing about that is that if you do make a mistake, you can sort of correct yourself. Whereas when you're on the live stream, like we were last night with the Solidarity E-Race or with Kyle Army 9-Hour or any of the international stuff that I've done, World Rallycross, etc., and some MotoGP and World Superbikes, then you don't have a choice. You've literally got to go on the fly, and if you make a mistake live, well, that's live. There's nothing you can do about it.
So take us to the Master of the Mile. This was just before the lockdown and the COVID-19 started becoming a real issue, which we'll talk about, and we're going to talk about the sim races as well. So I hope you've got lots of time and lots of coffee. Take us to the Master of the Mile. This was a kind of a time attack hill climb challenge a while back, and that was I believe it's on ILEB on Facebook, where I watch a lot of racing. That was live broadcast. Is that a little bit different then? There's a lot of pressure here and there, miscommunication.
Yeah, I think my very first commentary, as I said to you, was with Rog, where he walked out the room. However, 4 months later, after only doing two or three other events after that, I had to do World Superbikes live. And, of course, being at Kyle Army World Superbikes is a massive event.
Huge.
Myself and another commentator joined Dave Peterson. And eventually it was just Dave and I that actually jumped in because the other guy had to go and do the live commentary to the circuit. So, I learned quite a bit from the working with Dave and working with the TV crew on how to handle yourself and sort of how to open and close the show, get the links in, et cetera, how to communicate. Because sometimes while you're doing World Superbike commentary and it's a flat-out race between – at that stage when we were doing it, it was Pier Francesco Chili, Carl Fogarty, Ben Bostrom, Troy Corsa, Harger, and Edwards all fighting frantically. And while you're in the middle of a frantic, frantic fight, you've got your director in your ear going, please don't forget to mention this, and you must also remember that you've got this happening. And then when we finished up with this heat, remember we've got to go to the prize giving, you need to leave, so you've got to hand it over to Dave. So you've got this guy in your ear the whole time.
Sounds like a breakfast show.
Giving you instruction while you're trying to concentrate on what you're actually commentating on. So, you get used to that, though. And, like with last night's broadcast, or, for instance, with the live broadcast that happened at the Master of the Mile at the Emerald Speed Festival, it's second nature. It becomes like when you're driving your car and you're listening to your radio. You hear the radio, but sometimes you don't even know what's on.
Yep.
Hopefully the people that are listening to your radio station are listening properly right now, though.
Oh, yes. That happens. The tuning. So
that second nature kind of kicks in. It is the pressure is a bit more. As I said, I've done a massive amount of live broadcast now. So it's and I don't want to sound, like that I'm blowing my own horn here, but it does become a little bit easier every single time you do it. There's still, a little bit of butterflies, particularly when you do a new big event like Speed Festival or – for instance, when I did the World Rallycross, it's new drivers, it's a new format, it's a whole new way of thinking, a different way of commentary. Every race and every race category I do has a different sort of theme and tone to it. When I'm doing historic racing cars, it's not necessarily all about the race.
No.
A lot of the times it's a bit more about the history of the cars and the history of the people that used to race the cars. And the livery on the side of the car and where the history of that car came from, et cetera, et cetera. That's what people like to hear. But when I'm doing 125 or 250cc motocross, all they want to hear is who's banging who and who's crashing into what and how high the jump is.
Yes.
So
a lot of action.
I think there's a tone to each thing,
So let's get into a little bit of motorsport in South Africa at the moment. It's been a big topic. Motorsport SA, the South African Endurance Series, Kyle Army hosting a 9-hour event recently, that sort of stuff. In your opinion, and no one's going to quote you on this, except for everyone who's listening, of course, how healthy is motorsport in South Africa? How are we doing?
Look, I'll be blatantly honest with you. I think we're in a bit of a recession as we are everywhere else in the country. My biggest concern with South African motorsport, and I look at it as part of my career, which you guys probably don't know, for 4 years, I actually took over the role that my dad had at Westbank as the motorsport manager. And in that we kind of went through a whole reshuffle of motorsport where we'd gone from touring cars, which was just unbelievably exciting racing. The V8s were kind of the big competitor to touring cars. So you had the V8 fans and you had the touring car fans, and there was always a clash between them, and they had their own tour, and we had, you know, and it was just, there was a bit of chaos. Then there was the introduction of Vodacom Power Tour, which I was very fortunate to get the role as commentator for. But I also was involved with the whole marketing and PR of those events with Pole Position Promotions. And of course, with that, Westbank kind of came on and said, well, look, we'd like to have your skills and your experience, and took me for 4 years. But as I said, with that experience, we kind of went through a process with Motorsport South Africa being the headline sponsor of the biggest road show and road racing show in the country, on what we thought the future of motorsport would be. And we had this big discussions back and forth about how motorsport would be going. And even back then, I mean, that was in 2007, 2008, 2009. I was stating at that point, and having been involved at that stage for almost 10, 12 years as a commentator, that I think South Africa has too much motorsport. And I hate to say that, because a lot of guys go, yeah, but you know, we can't go and race with these guys, we can't go and race with those guys, it's too expensive.
Yeah.
But I think due to the fact that we're no longer in the 80s and 90s, where the amount of entertainment available on a weekend was limited, you could have maybe one rugby game, maybe one good soccer game, and local I'm talking about, not even talking about British football or anything else, and you would have a concert or an event. Now, 52 weeks of the year, you are battling as a motorsport track owner and promoter to not clash with Super Rugby.
Oh, yes.
Soccer, golf, all the big sports, first of all. And then take into account radio stations like yourself and all of the nationally based radio stations that put on their own massive events on a weekendly basis as well. And it's once or twice a month that those happen. So your audience is very much fractured in terms of its ability to go and dedicate itself to a motorsport event. And I think that's where motorsport is missing the ball game. And I say that, or they are seeing the ball game, but not seeing the value of the ball game, because the ball game is their biggest competition.
Yep.
So that's, if we had a situation where we filtered down what we've currently got, and let me tell you, what we've got, currently got in this country, is exceptionally good racing. Single-seaters, saloon cars, motorcycles, motocross, probably arguably some of the best racing you'll have. In fact, my favorite racing of all time at this point in time is actually Formula V, and it's a lot of people look at it and go, yeah, but it's such an old category. And
it's exciting.
Do not get more exciting racing. I mean, it's literally like a 600cc four-wheeled category.
Yep.
It's that exciting. And they never fail to deliver a good race. So from a commentator's point of view, it's always lovely to chat about that, because you've got so much to talk about. Whereas sometimes in, for instance, our touted premier category, global touring cars.
Yes.
The cars are spread out by 10, 12 seconds apart, and there's nothing happening. And you've got to really pull from the bottom of your knowledge pile something to talk about.
Mm.
So if we looked at currently what South Africa has and maybe just filtered things down a little bit, I think we'd be in a very strong position. Unfortunately, there's also a scenario where there's a lot of people that have been involved in the sport for a long time, and they're realizing that if they don't hang on, they may lose out. So it's that white knuckle holding on for dear life instead of just letting it go and go to the next generation, which probably got a lot better understanding of how things work with social media and marketing and PR in the world we live in, is what they should be looking at. So yeah, I'm not doubting that South Africa has got an exceptionally strong motorsport heritage, and we are very strong in terms of our abilities, because if you look at the likes of our boys overseas, the Van der Lindes, the Binders, the Mariases, you know, any of those guys that are representing us overseas, we have the ability to take on the world's best. I mean, if you even think about just in the karting industry, you know, for the last 15 years at world karting finals, South Africa's come back with, I think it's 12 or 13 world championships.
And that's good for the youth to come through, you know, and shows the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. And if you think about that, I mean, our strength is phenomenal. We are world class. Yes, we might not have the budget to go and take on the world's best. I mean, I was listening to an interview with Sheridan today, or last night, I should say, and he was saying, you know, a lot of the times some of the opportunities that he had a chance of getting just weren't available because he just didn't have the money to go. So, you know, we're in a situation where why should we send our guys overseas to go and spend gazillion rands and not feature anywhere when we could put it back into grassroots here and make SA's championship what it used to be in the 80s. I mean, there were guys that used to come from America, UK, Australia to South Africa to ride against our best riders because it was such a competitive category. And it had the same look and feel as what our guys are now trying to get into in Europe. So your Spanish championship, your Italian championship, the World Supersports, the British championship, BSB. And I'm talking motorcycles only here. I'm not even
the car
categories. The car categories are exactly the same. Guys used to come from all around the world to race against our guys here, you know. And I'm talking about the sort of the John Loves and that era. So we've got a talent pool of note. We've got a very, very strong motorsport, standing at this stage. Oh, but it's just the way it's been marketed and promoted at this point, I think, is where we're lacking.
Let's talk for a minute about racetracks. The Kyalami circuit was upgraded. Toby Venter bought it a while back. It was closed for a bit. And now it's a lot, in my opinion, it's a lot better. I haven't driven or ridden the new track, which I'm very, very desperately going to do quite soon. I know the old Kyalami. It was already a fantastic track to drive. What is our quality of racetracks like? Compared to some of the European tracks, compared to Adelaide, compared to some of the other tracks around the world. Are we there?
Yeah, we're there for sure. I mean, a good example is, of course, Red Star Raceway, which was a purpose-built motorcycle circuit initially. And then eventually got given the grade upgrade to run cars and bikes there, and the ability to run both ways. So Red Star has an opportunity where you've got 6 months of the year running clockwise, months of the year running anti-clockwise, which gives you actually two tracks you can use as part of your calendar if you're going to allocate Red Star as part of your calendar. Kyalami is world-class. There's no doubt about it. The infrastructure and the amount of money that's been put into that and put into it on a very good basis because, of course, what we got was the Kyalami 9-hour last year. Every person that I've ever spoken to or chatted to or had the opportunity to talk about as a commentator and then became sort of, I wouldn't say friends, but we become acquaintances because of the role I have.
Yes.
And I'm talking about sort of world championship riders and drivers that I've had the chance to work with. They are always blown away by the fact that Kyalami is not included in so many championships that they've been involved in due to the angulation and the ability of a driver to enjoy himself so much at Kyalami, which you would have known at the old circuit, but I can tell you even better at the new one.
Yes, yes. Oh, Greg, what,
and
in your
every
opinion,
driver we sort of chatted to online and interviewed from the Kyalami 9-hour said the exact same thing. You know, why is this hidden gem being put away for so long? Why do we not have this on other championships? You know, World Superbikes was definitely looking and sniffing to try and get another date at Kyalami because they had them on the provisional calendar in 2019. So I think negotiations were in place there. I just think the management at Kyalami wanted to first get the 9-hour in and sort of cement that deal before they looked at any other championship opportunities for them to have another international on the year's calendar.
That was a big win.
The one problem you've got with Kyalami right now is the expense. And, of course, it is to generate that money back in again that's been put into the circuit. To hire Kyalami as a regional or even as a national championship circuit for a calendar event is a very, very expensive outing. So they've kind of gone with one a year for each of the categories. And in fact, it's so expensive, the South African Superbike Championship that, of course, have just picked up NGK as their sponsor, have partnered up with the Festival of Motoring to bring the cost down to each of the riders. Because otherwise it would be sort of a 7,500-8,000 rand entry fee, whereas your normal entry fee is about 2,500-3,000. So that's the one issue I have with Kyalami, although it is tending to get a bit better as, of course, the money comes in and more festivals and more big events arrive. And it'll eventually come down completely to where it used to be. But, I mean, if you take any of the tracks around the country that we race at, even the one that is touted to be sort of the the sort of black sheep, I would say, in terms of the motorsport industry, but not in terms of the drivers and riders who love going there. East London.
Oh, yes.
East London Grand Prix Circuit, of course, hosted the very first South African Grand Prix. And it's still, yes, in a bit of tatters and a bit of wreck and ruin, but from a racing spectacle, it's just probably one of the best circuits I've ever commentated at in my career. You don't get much better than what happens at East London Grand Prix Circuit.
Sure, but so, Greg, what do you think is lying ahead for the SA Motorsport Series and motorsport in general? You're saying they need to reduce the amount of motorsport. What, in your opinion, is the best way forward?
I think we definitely need a premier category of some nature that would then also hold a South African Drivers' Championship title. We don't have that.
Oh, that's true.
So yes, you'll have a global touring car champion, you'll have a Formula Ford champion, you'll have a Polo Cup champion, and you'd have a single-seater champion. But you don't have a South African driving champion like we used to. So we definitely need a category of some nature that could probably hold that. And I know Global Touring Cars has been working frantically to try and up the amount of cars they've got, first of all. Volkswagen Motorsport have put in a massive boost to that, with the introduction of the Super Polo Cup, which of course is the modified Polo Cup cars that are going to be racing as a sport category to Global Touring Cars. The infrastructure that comes with that, of course, is also influx of ex-national championship style and types, and guys who are coming in with good budgets to run those cars. So the likes of Andre Bessadenote, who of course raced at the Emerald Speed Festival and is two-time winner of King of the Hill at the Knysna Hill Climb in his Gould F1 Hill Climb car. Sean Dermody makes a welcome return. Roy Campos and Jason Campos come into it, so it's dad and son.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So it's maybe not the youth that are going to set the field alight, but it's definitely names that people will recognize. And of course, that is vital. Then you throw in a couple of youthful drivers who won Polo Cup and moved up from their Polo Cup careers, to the tune of Jonathan Mochotsi, Jeff Kruger, Brad Liebenberg. And then you have a nice mix of drivers who have experience and youth behind it as a bit of, you know, a bit of rubbing is racing that will happen between them. So if that all works well, which I'm hoping it does, and of course when we get our lockdown we'll only find that out, that would probably be an ideal situation to be in, with a very strong saloon car championship. We have a very, very strong, in fact we've got two very strong single-seater championships that run side-by-side on occasion. But sometimes when guys come to the track and they see Formula 1600, which is our Formula Ford class,
yes,
with the wings and slicks, and they see Vs, they go, oh, it's the same thing. There's not that much to differentiate between them. And in fact, if you look at the lap times, there's actually not a lot of differentiation anyway.
Yeah.
So it's too close. They need to be on separate tours, if I had to put it that way. And I think what we had as Vodacom Power Tour and Pro Tour in that time period was a very good thing, because it gave the circuits, the smaller circuits, a definite two calendar dates a year. The bigger tracks would get maybe three, and the competitors were not forced to go and race everything they've got all on one weekend. You know?
Yeah.
And when I say that, I say that as an example, we've got 111 Sports and Saloon, Super Hatch, and Volkswagen Challenge.
Oh, that's,
if you own a Golf,
you can race
in all three of those classes.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, saturating the sport. It's too much. And if you're a spectator on the side and you see, I'll use an example, it's not probably the ideal example, but just as an example, you see Adrian Dalton go out in his extra shoes Golf in all three classes, you're going, what the hell? Why is he there? You know, what's the point? Yeah, he's there to enjoy himself. Yes. He's getting six races on a day.
Yes.
And,
but it's like watching the same race six times.
Practice sessions and two and three qualifying sessions. So value for money, it's fantastic. But spectacle-wise, maybe not so much to the crowd. But that, as I said, that's my opinion. So I think we need a strong saloon car category. We need a strong single-seater category. And we need a strong bike category, which we've got all three.
Yes.
If we put those into a top-end tour, whatever it's going to be called. Currently it's running as Extreme Festival, but it could be running as whatever else.
Yes.
And they went on their own, two circuits around the country, and then brought in whatever the local class was as a support class I think that's where we need to go.
So there's still brilliantly. Still room for grassroots guys. There's still room for grassroots guys to participate in these races. There's still room for guys getting into motorsport scene to have different races. But we've got a couple of premium classes in SA, which will reignite the Sarel van der Merwe era and the Bankfin touring cars with the Nissan Primeras, the BMWs and the Audis, all. So much excitement around that, and then obviously our superbike classes, which was unforgettable at that stage. You know, I'm talking late 90s, maybe 2004, 2005, when motorsport seemed to be at a very high point. Was that the basic structure of motorsport? We're harping on this for a little bit, but I can we're going to play certain parts of this in certain areas.
Fine.
Yeah. So was that the sort of structure that we need to go back to?
I think so. I mean, I might be wrong, but I think, you know, when it all fell apart and everybody decided to do their own things, that's when we lost the crowds. It's when we lost the ability to promote the sport nicely, and the big sponsors all pulled out. So at that time period, you had Westbank involved, you had Sasol involved, you had Sahara Computers involved, you had Vodacom involved. Those are all big powers and big powerhouses in terms of corporates involved. When it all fell apart, the only people that stayed around were a couple of manufacturers.
Yeah.
Thank goodness we've got a manufacturer like Volkswagen who stuck to their guns all the way through. But it's very difficult for guys to stick to a category that's not giving them a return on investment. And to be honest with you, and I also say this because it's something that people know, I always say, there are a lot of people in South African motorsport that have taken sponsors for a ride in a big way.
Oh, yes.
You know,
and that hurts the game.
Yeah, and they hurt the ability to go back to them to ask for more money for somebody else.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you've got a sponsor that's been bitten, they're never going to come back.
It just doesn't work for them.
So it makes it very difficult for someone to sort of go back to any sponsor you can think of and say, well, listen, I'm involved in motorsport and I'd like to offer you guys an opportunity, and they just turn around and go, no, I'm sorry, the last person in motorsport that we're involved in did this. And we're never going back.
Yeah.
And that's happened, I can't even tell you how many times.
There's a couple of more things.
I understand when people are, and when corporates change their strategy. So, Westbank went through a change of strategy where they were no longer sort of concentrating only on wheels, and they moved all their finance deals into assets as opposed to just wheels.
Yeah.
So maybe motorsport wasn't the ideal platform for them to be in. But they've come back. You know, they've come back and they're now sponsoring the, cars.co.za, Car of the Year competition that runs.
Yeah.
And initially, they were the biggest sponsor and the longest sponsor of the Guild of Motoring Journalists Car of the Year, which was only, I think it was about a week or so ago, that they announced the iPace as Car of the Year with Auto Trader involved there now. So, you know, the wheel turns the whole time. So people have got to realize that. And I mean, another great example is Coca-Cola hasn't been involved in motorsport for
quite a
while.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you when the last car that rolled up with Coca-Cola livery was. It was before my time, that's for sure. And next thing, at the Kyle Army 9 Hour, you know, Team Perfect Circle are now running Coca-Cola livery, and they've got
money
from ABI.
Yeah.
So you know, it takes a long time, and sometimes it takes a while for the old guard at those corporates to sort of move on and new thinking to come in and new blood to come in. So even that could be a factor to take into account. But it is 9 times out of 10, a corporate that's been burnt in motorsport won't come back.
So correct me.
So you've got to be so careful to make sure that when they are there, giving them, you know, and that's what I try to do with everybody. And I mean, sometimes it's a conflict of interest with my own sponsor, but my own sponsors all realize the value that I can bring as a whole and as the bigger picture. So mentioning, you know, and I've mentioned so many brands today that I'm not even involved in, but that's what you have to do to make them happy.
And you're involved with Suzuki at the moment.
Yeah. Well, it's now a 17-year involvement with them. I try and pride myself in is the ability to retain the sponsorship and to retain a partnership, which becomes almost a family for me, because I'm not the kind of guy who goes into a relationship with a corporate having my name as the selling point.
Yes.
To go and shaft them or do something wrong to make them look bad. So one of the cool things about the job I have and the career I've made with that job is that I try to keep all the sponsors happy, but my own ones particularly.
Of course. So three people benefit from motorsport, or three different entities benefit from motorsport. It'll be the manufacturer, if there's a manufacturer involved. I think that's a lot of the reason, and I think you said it on the sim race as well, that the manufacturer are the ones that are dictating what racing is going to take place, where they're going to be involved in, and so on, because they sell cars. Their cars look very good on track. They sell cars because of the sport. Then there's the sponsorships who get involved, and then obviously the driver benefits from that because they get to further their career and so on. Is there anyone else who can benefit from motorsport, perhaps for spectators?
Yeah, look, I think the way things have changed up from and I'm going to use myself as an example, straight out commentary no longer pays my bills. You know, it used to when we had a great television production that was on almost a sort of two-weekly basis.
Yeah.
But as that has all changed up, and, of course, with the implementation of social media, one of the big factors, of course, was with the e-race and being in lockdown. Without that, I probably wouldn't have made it through lockdown. The way things have changed is part and parcel of the deals that I put together on a racetrack's using me as their preferred MC or preferred commentator is I try to bring a bit more to the game as opposed to just the commentary and a possible MC for the night's prize giving.
Yes.
There's a lot that can be done and a lot of value to be gotten from social media. So, I mean, the reason you've cottoned on to me as the voice of choice is I've got a relatively big following on social media. And with that, I try and promote my own sponsors and I try and promote events that I go to via those channels because you know, we just take example from last night's e-race. At the end of the production last night, we were sitting at about, I think it was about 6,000 views on YouTube and social media on the three-hour production we put together.
That's fantastic.
And for a small production that was put together in less than 2 weeks for two races, that's massive. You know, the planning that would go into a big event, sort of like the Kyle Army 9, of course, we can probably quadruple, if not more, the engagement and footprint that we've got, but that's a massive market to be tapped into. So, and I'm even doing it with my youngster. My youngest is she's got a little bit of a love for the sport and loves being involved with whatever I do. And whenever we go away with her, she takes on a role as the world's youngest motor journalist.
Oh, that's amazing!
Being 8 years old.
Wow!
And last year at the Jaguar Samala Hill Climb, she actually had more engagements and more social media hits than I did.
Because of I saw that.
Such a unique concept. And in fact, for this year's event, I've actually got the email. I was looking at it 2 days ago because I've had to try and do bits and pieces. And we, right behind me, as we're speaking, to be honest with you, we're busy with a project that Hill Climb have asked her to do, and it's to do sort of a
fantastic
a kids representation of the Hill Climb. Now, a couple of guys have done that. They've done a Lego, and they've done a Lego of the start and everything. But she's busy with an entire build on a small scale of the entire circuit and infrastructure. So when I look at that, and I can see my other two youngsters that I've got also social media sort of experts.
That's the future.
It's definitely a career that can be taken into serious light now, as opposed to what it used to be, where you go, yeah, you're a YouTuber or you're a social media influencer. YouTubers at this stage, there's a couple of kids overseas that are close to six or even on six-figure salaries as their income from being on social media.
Oh, way over. There's
so
a couple of big ones.
I'm looking
at
with her.
No, for sure.
And she's loving it. I mean, you know, she tags herself as Monkey Moo, and she's actually got a little YouTube channel called Monkey Moo Tube. So we have some fun with that. And on lockdown, I mean, the first couple of Live on the Drive stuff I did was with her and her Lego characters, you know, talking as if we were in lockdown and we were using the Lego characters so they could be outside so that people couldn't see that we were outside. So it's fun to have.
And Greg, step aside. We need to talk to your daughter. Get out of the room. Let's get her closer. She's the future.
I'll call Annie in. She'll be happy to chat to you.
Yeah, no, definitely. We must actually do that at some stage. I'd like to talk about the sim race, because we've been talking about the e-race and the sim race. Mm-hmm. It's basically the same thing. For those of us who don't understand or don't know exactly what it is, I actually viewed two of the races, and then I watched, Thursday morning. Yesterday morning, I watched the second and third race that took place. We've got massive names, and this is not playing games. It's not some overweight guy sitting somewhere and playing a game, playing his life away. There's money involved.
No, there is. Look, we were very fortunate to pick up a couple of very good data and IT sponsors. So it's right down their alley, and of course in the game that they play. NEC Global, AfriHost, and Data Science Corporation, Pure Storage. And then we had one of our drivers from the very first event jumped in as a sponsor as well, who does race strategy for gaming as well as for on-track stuff as well. And True Race joined us as well. But the cool thing about it is no other race and e-race in this country has pulled the first race's 20,000 Rand purse. And last night's 50,000 Rand purse.
That's amazing.
To the drivers. And that's nothing coming to anybody that's involved in the actual event and paying the salaries and the small little amounts that we were given to keep us above water. And in fact, without it, as I said earlier on, we wouldn't be able to do what we did. And I wouldn't be getting through the current situation at home.
So what happens? A bunch of guys all around the world say, I'm interested in racing against some of the best guys in the world, and there's a computer game or a PlayStation game.
Yeah.
In this case, it's Gran Turismo GT, isn't it?
Yeah, well, in our case, we actually used Assetto Corsa Competizione, which is the official game for the Intercontinental GT Championship, which is the cars that drive at the 9 hour at Kyalami.
Okay, so you have a certain set of cars. And
correct. And then basically you can set up any configuration you want. That's the beauty of the game. You can set the temperature. You can set track conditions. You can set the track conditions to change. You can set the temperature to change. You can set up any format of racing you want. So you can have sprint racing. You can have endurance racing. You can have hot lap sessions. So what we did for the first one at Kyalami is we had a 3 or 4 day hot laps, which then gave us a top 100.
Yes.
The top 100 then went into 4 semifinals at Kyalami, and the top the top 6 went into a final, and then we had a wild card race, which then gave us the 25th driver for the final.
So and anyone can participate. You can say, listen, I want to enter.
Yeah, what we did is we limited to people that were stuck at home in South Africa for these two events, purely because of the lockdown.
Yes.
But the interest has already come through. I mean, we had Jordan Pepper on last night saying that all of his iRacing guys wanted to be involved.
Oh, yes.
The Funder Linders wanted in, but of course they're all overseas. So, as I said, the limitation for the first two events was to local only. But there is definitely moves afoot to bring in an international field. And that's exactly what's happening in the iRacing and the other e-racing that happens, is it's literally people anywhere around the world. And it's not literally a situation where you've got to wait for an event like us. These things are happening on a nightly basis. You can get onto a server on one of these games, and there might be 9 or 10 guys, and they say, okay, let's race. And they race. And one guy can be in Japan, one guy can be in England, one guy can be in Australia. And they're all racing against each other. That's the beauty of it.
And this is not going to disappear after lockdown or COVID-19. This is going to become more and more prevalent. It has been coming for a couple of years. I've been following it a little bit. But it's become so much more prevalent over the last month or two. This is not going to disappear. This is going to become another form of motorsport where so many sponsors and manufacturers can get involved.
Well, I can tell you that the moves afoot so far since our end of last night is Motorsport South Africa has already contacted us. They have got a company already involved. I've actually got a message from him right now that are looking to take on a national championship level racing, because there is a World Cup of iRacing and E. So there's a lot of guys that race all around the world in various formats and then represent their countries at the World Cup. If you take into account, I think it was last year or the year before, I think it was actually last year, at the Race of Champions, which of course is that big one that they put on in the stadium where they invite the best rally driver, the best rally cross driver, world F1, whatever, to race against each other in exact same cars. for the first time last year, an e-racer was brought in and actually beat one of the hot shots in terms of a real racing. So there's certainly, and I mean, we've seen it now just from the input that we've got from everybody here, a massive need for, first of all, probably a more organized national series of e-racing.
Yes.
We're not looking to do that as Solidarity E-Race and the company behind that. We're kind of looking to do the big events. So we sort of take on what would be the Race of Champions for South Africa, or on a similar vein, the ones we've done over the last 2 weeks, where it becomes an event as opposed to a championship.
Yes.
So the event side of things we'd like to handle. But we definitely want to be involved with the leagues and with the other people that are putting these championships together, because that would be our feeders. So the success of the event, though, I think has definitely been due to the fact that we're in lockdown. But it doesn't mean it has to stop while we're out of lockdown, because the e-racing doesn't stop. Gaming is massive. I just couldn't believe figures that were thrown at me the other day in terms of gaming in South Africa, never mind worldwide.
That's huge.
And, I mean, you just look at Supersport. They've got a dedicated channel just to gaming.
Yeah. No, it's insane. It's only going to grow because people are getting into it now. More people are understanding what it's about. And we've got guys like one of our most promising drivers in South Africa, Stuart White. He was involved in the race. We got the Van der Linde boys, like you said, who wanted to be involved in the race. And a couple of other guys as well who joined you in commentary for a
Jordan
brief.
Pepper.
Jordan Pepper was there. And they wanted to be involved. So we've got big names saying that sim racing and e-racing is something to be looked at. And as a driver, from a driver's perspective, there's no real cost involved. There's no racing cost involved.
No, there
involved.
Isn't. I mean, if you think about trying to set up a race car and how much it costs you, then you've got to go and buy tires, fuel, enter, and go and race and possibly crash your car and then have to do a rebuild, etc.
All over, yeah.
Here, it's a relatively strong computer system, and it can be PS2, Xbox, or PC. A good driving set up, so a little rig. You don't have to literally be in the racing rigs that a lot of these guys race in. It can be a desk mounted steering wheel and pedals at your feet.
Yeah.
As we saw with one of the drivers that got into the finals last night, that's all he uses. It can even be a thrust controller that you use on your PS2 or PS3 or whatever you're using. And literally from there you go racing. But the beauty about the sport is, and it is a sport, because I mean it's even been introduced into the Olympics. You've got top racers, top drivers, top gamers all getting involved into them and racing against each other. And the ability of the race organizer, which fell into our hands, me being part of the team and also part of the commentary, was to put a format together. And you can you literally, the world is your oyster. You can do whatever you want to. I mean, we set up a situation last night for the first time where we hadn't used the weather app.
Yes. That was fantastic to see. Oh, that was so nice.
It's torrential downpour. and you don't know what's going to happen, like you don't know what's going to happen in real life. Tire wear comes into play. Damage on the car comes into play. Your ability to talk to the driver that's next to you. You can chat to the oak who's busy banging your wing mirror while you're racing.
And there were mandatory pit stops channeled into the race as well. So you had to make a pit stop in a certain pit window as well. So that was interesting.
And if you haven't practiced that in your practice sessions, it's not an easy thing to do.
The pit stop.
Because you've actually got to come in on F1 style precision and hit the pit box at the right point. Otherwise, it takes you maybe 10 or 12 seconds more because they jiggle the car. We, unfortunately, hadn't set that up last night where you could see the pit crew jump in and do the change. But in the car, as the driver, if you set that up, you can see your pit crew walking around you, doing the tire changes, shifting your car back, shifting your car forward if you haven't hit the pit box right.
So if you haven't seen any of the sim races or any of the e-races and so on, I was skeptical initially about the fact of watching a sim race or an e-race. I thought, how interesting could it be? When I saw yourself and Sasha Martiningo was involved as commentary, I thought, this might be quite big. And then I saw a couple of big names, you know, some of the more familiar names and so on. It was exciting. I couldn't stop watching it. So it was nearly as exciting as watching a real SA race. You know, some of the crashes you crash and you get back on track and there's no real damage on the car, except for, I think it was a main race. We had some damage in some of the cars, but it's exciting to watch, and it's something different. And I suppose we can keep talking about this for hours on end, but I'd like to get back to real motorsport in South Africa. I had a chat with Davi van der Merwe, one of the polo Polo Cup guys, and he actually did well at the end of last year, just before we did this recording, this interview. And he said there's no real clarity as to when the motorsport series in South Africa is going to be back on. Greg, do you have any idea as to when they start? They planning on letting practice sessions go again? Or when we're going to do racing again?
Unfortunately, I don't have any good news for you at all. Our last notification that came from MSA is it's still shut down until possibly to the end of July. And if you look at any of the international notifications that have come out, F1 are only looking to start on the 5th of July. MotoGP are only looking at August as an initial start date. World Superbikes are not even thinking about anything yet, and the possibility of them cancelling the entire season is probably on the cards. We had Andrew Coley with us as one of our commentators during the semi-finals. He's, of course, the official commentator for World Rallycross. He couldn't even give us any indication as to what was going to be happening there. So, unfortunately, we're stuck with a situation where I think this very tragic situation that the world is in is dictating as to what's going to happen with events and racing and concerts or any mass gatherings up until at least the end of July. So I wouldn't be putting anything out there to say that official dates have been launched, because nothing has. But I'm working on basically the fact that we'll probably only be looking at end of July, August before we get anything. And then, of course, that is all what's going to happen, whether it's going to be behind closed doors.
Yes.
And we race to whoever's at the track only with no crowds. And that's exactly what F1 and MotoGP are thinking too, and any of the big sports around the world. Dates that I do have, September for Hill Climb is touted,
yes.
But that also all depends on what's going to happen with the current situation. 9 Hour is apparently still on the calendar, because that only happens in November, but that of course will also be dictated by how Motorsport South Africa and the categories, circuits and promoters get together to try and rearrange what is left of 2020's calendar.
Yeah. And how does it affect the drivers by not having seat time? I know some of the guys are doing sim racing. Some of the younger guys perhaps are being involved in these races. Is it a bit of a racing rust that sets in by guys not getting seat time, drivers especially?
Sure. Yeah, for sure. You know, your biggest valuable asset as a motorsport competitor is to be in the seat or in on the bike. And if you're not getting that opportunity to do those kind of things, of course it's going to affect you. I think the biker guys take a little bit more strain because they don't have the ability to do anything, whereas at least with the sim guys, they can race.
Yeah.
There are sim races for motorcycles, but of course it doesn't give you the same feel being on a motorcycle.
No, not at all.
But yeah, whereas the sim guys, they've got some rigs set up that give you a really close to, if not as good as feeling as what you'd be in the car. And that's why these sim races are so exciting, because you know, you look at these guys, they use those sim rigs to familiarize themselves with circuits around the world and get to grips with how the track works. And if you've got a decent game, it actually gives you the undulations, the bumps, the curbs and everything exactly the same as what it would be. So those guys are fortunate, but you can take nothing away from wanting to be actually physically in your car or on the seat of your motorcycle.
Nothing beats that. No.
Stupid speed down the back stretch.
So what an exciting conversation we're having with Greg Maloney. I haven't been watching the time. I see we've been going for quite a bit now. But how can we follow you? What sort of platforms are you involved in? Where can we see you next? Whether it be under lockdown or when we start racing again.
Well, we're hoping to bring you some good news in the very near future. I'll just give you a little, you might even get, you'll probably get the first part of this little bite, other than anybody who got the press release this morning. There is a broadcaster who's shown a bit of interest in what we did last night. So with that, there's a very good possibility of a third installment. And if it is going to come out, it'll probably be coming out in the next week or so in terms of the announcement of the dates of that one. So there'd be a third installment of the Solidarity E-Race. I'm not quite sure, as I said, the dates on that yet. As soon as it becomes available, I might just pop you a WhatsApp with that too, so you've got it.
Yes, please.
If you want to have a chat again about that, you're more than welcome to give me a shout. Every Monday, that's also sort of pending public holidays falling on a Monday. It's either every Monday or every Tuesday. We've got our current show called Keeping Motorsport Alive. That happens on my page, which is Greg Maloney, the voice of choice on Facebook. It also goes out on ILEB. And then you've got, you know, every now and again, and on a daily basis as much as I can. With lockdown, it's been a little less, but every day on my page is a little platform that I call Live on the Drive, where you jump in my car or wherever I am or whatever car I'm in at that stage, and we just chat about motorsport and motoring and any events that are happening, and people can use it as a platform to sell their wares and tears and tell people about their events at the same time. So that's usually usually in the morning, because it's sort of better traffic in the morning that I pick up with the internet and social media. But it can be at different times of the day, depending on events that I'm at. You know, it all feeds how the event is going. But if you are following on social, of course, most people will know that if you want to get notification, just get onto the page, click on one of the videos. If you want live notification, every time I go live, you'll get a little beep on your phone, and you're more than welcome to jump in.
Definitely worth it, following through with Greg Maloney. Rudy, any questions from your side before we let Greg back to his family and finish that project that needs to be done by November?
Greg, I'm just wondering, I'm watching the future of motorsports. I'm personally very interested in the future of motoring and moving around on both two and four wheels in the future of the entire planet, to be honest. When it comes to motor racing and spectator involvement and enjoyment, obviously now with COVID-19 and the lockdown at home, as you have been speaking about, it is e-racing and doing it from home behind the desk with a rig for your PlayStation or Xbox. So that's bringing the technological side of the world into our very own homes and obviously scouting perhaps new talent for the future. What is your opinion on actual e-racing, electronic racing, electric racing, Formula E, the ID series,
ID series
coming to South Africa?
I'm a massive fan.
It's electric. The costs must be lower.
Yeah, I think the initial costs are a bit higher, but once they've got it up and running, the cost will definitely be a lot lower. But I'm a big fan. Yeah. I was sold on an opportunity to go and do some social media coverage and some PR coverage for Alan John Fenter, our road racing star that has participated in the last 6 Isle of Man TTs. I went over as his PR and social manager 2 years ago.
I'm putting my hand up. Please take me next time.
AJ's a legend.
Listen, I was very fortunate. Please. I didn't think I was going to make it, and the next thing somebody graciously paid my air ticket, which helped out a massive, massive amount. But being there and seeing, you know, what they run there as the electric bike class, from that day on, I was literally sold on the concept. And then, of course, with World Rallycross coming to South Africa and me jumping on as the official commentator there, the other thing that caught me out was all the manufacturers talking about the fact that they were going to change from the current, I mean, mind-blowingly exciting and noisy machinery that runs in World Rallycross to electric cars. And I was like, oh man, if you don't get electric cars, that's going to be boring.
Which are more powerful. Yeah.
And I saw one. And I mean, they are the fastest accelerating cars other than a dragster in motorsport at this point
insane.
In time.
Yeah.
But the electric cars are half a second quicker than them in terms of acceleration from 0 to 60 or 0 to 20. So if you think an F1 car.
Touring cars, yeah.
No, exactly. I mean, an F1 car
accelerates from 0 to 100. Hybrids, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they accelerate from 0 to 100 in about 2.5 seconds, I think it is. Or 2 seconds. It's 1.5 seconds.
Yeah.
It's 1.5 seconds for a world rallycross car. Now it's 1.2 seconds for an electric rallycross car. I mean, that's just mental. You can't even say 100 k's an hour in 1.2 seconds, and it's there.
No.
There's no lag. It's instantaneous gratification. I always put it in layman's terms as, have you ever had a Scalextrics car? Put it on the track and pull that trigger.
It goes.
And watch how fast that thing accelerates. Even if you've got the basic, you know, the basic pick and pay special Scalextrics, it's still that exciting in terms of if you were in that car when the person hits the throttle. So, I think electric racing is the future. There's no doubt about it, really. And if you watch what the big manufacturers are doing, I mean, I mentioned it earlier on, and hopefully it'll come in the same part of the interview, but if it doesn't matter. Car of the Year was an I-Pace Jaguar.
I-Pace, yeah.
So already
they
are going that route. And all the big manufacturers are only talking electric right now. there's nothing else that's on their on their radar at all. So if they're doing that, that means motorsport is going to be the enemy. Look at that incredible run that happened last year at Pikes Peak with Volkswagen's Hill Climb car.
Oh, that was fantastic as well. Yeah,
that was insane.
I mean, they had to put a police siren on it just so that when it came past, people knew it was coming. Because you can't hear it. And the same thing applies when you're sitting on the end of Selby Strait at the Isle of Man, and you're expecting a superbike to come past you, and you'll hear it for probably 30 seconds before because it's at full tilt for almost 2Ks, and it's at 315, 320 Ks an hour when it passes you. When that electric bike comes past, you don't even know it's coming.
Yep.
It's absolutely mind-blowing. No, though, I'm a big fan, I must tell you. And, yes, I know there's a lot of petrol heads out there that will go, oh, but it's not a V8, and it's not a 1,000, it's not going to stay in the same. It doesn't matter. The technology is going that way. We don't have a choice.
And it goes like hell. I mean, some of these cars, like you said, the acceleration is immediate. You have all of the power available immediately. So the setups and so on the cars are going to change as well. It's going to be so exciting. And I was one of the guys who kicked against it before Honda came out with a DCT system, and there was talk about an automatic gearing system on a bike. I kicked against it until I rode one, and I'm in love. I just want to buy a Honda and ride that, just because of that. But now with the electronic cars or the electric cars coming through, I'm sold as well. And I think, Rudy, you and I have been talking about this on the show for quite a long time, with all these manufacturers are coming through. Engine replacements for cars that exist already. So Volkswagen have this great engines you can buy.
Correct.
You just put it into a race car. Why not?
It's just the future, isn't it? I mean,
which I'm not sure if you guys are a loaf of, but I hope it did get to you. The city of Cape Town, you know, they're a big supporter of the World Rallycross at Killarney. And we had an interview with the mayor and with one of the big aldermen from there. And the two of them have already sort of touted and made public knowledge at World Rallycross last year that Formula E have approached Cape Town as an official round of their big championship announcements, hopefully for 2021, and it will be a street circuit in Cape Town with Formula E.
Awesome.
We've heard but we didn't know it was official.
Put onto the calendar. It's not official yet, but it's basically in negotiation. And if the mayor of Cape Town City stands up in front of the 30,000 people that were at World Rallycross, as well as onto our RP TV, and says that Formula E is coming, you must know they're a long way down the path.
Yeah, there's something coming for sure.
That's fantastic. Wow. Greg, we can talk cars and motorsport for hours. We're going to let you go now.
You know, I can.
You do it like you get paid for it.
23 years of it.
So we would love to catch up with you on a more regular basis if you'd like to, and sort of more shorter snippets and keeping us up to date with what's happening, and also some of the upcoming events. We'd like to give coverage to the events on this portion of the show and also the breakfast show. During the week, so build up to events and so on. Let us know, keep us in the loop if there's something interesting that's going to happen. I was surprised by the Emerald Speed Festival. I actually only knew about it, and I try and keep an eye out for it once it started happening. So you know, keep us in the loop. Let us know about stuff beforehand, so that some of our listeners and some we could also know about it and participate. And the Lowfall is hungry for motorsport, especially track racing. We don't have any of that here, and we'd like to do it.
If things go according to plan, and I'm hoping that they do, of course, we'll send out a revised calendar. And when we get that revised calendar, I'll drop it to you. I'll let you know the kind of events that I'll be involved in. And if they're pertinent to what you guys want to be chatting about, or you just want general news about motorsport and what's happening on the events that I'm at, you're more than welcome to jump in at any stage and give me a shout out. We can do it directly from wherever I am as well. Might be quite nice. It gives a bit of a vibe as
that's
to how
very
things
nice.
Are going there.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
And of course, we head up to your side of the world, where is it? Hotel Numbi. Where is that? That's White River, I think it is.
Yeah, it's very close to us. Very close.
Yes. Numbi Hotel. So Hotel Numbi hosts the annual Suzuki Weekender. So if I'm up in that region with Suzuki at some point, I'll definitely pop in and maybe get up a day early and maybe get into the studio with you guys on Friday morning while we're there. Why not?
Yeah, I'll do it. We'd love that. That'd be great.
Sounds great. That sounds great, Greg. Bring a Suzuki GSXR as well.
I'll bring it along. It's not as grunty as your fuel, but I'd love to have a go because that's probably, I would say, my third favorite motorcycle of all time. So, yeah, definitely a big fan. Have you got the belt drive or the chain drive?
Indeed. I'm running an 1125R, the one of the latest iterations, belt drive, running around 160-odd horses. So it's lovely.
Oh, what a beast. What a beast.
And if you say your second or third motorbike, because obviously Suzuki's your first, if you say a Triumph is your second or third, then we'll be okay. We'll be all right.
Yeah. You're right on target. Because
oh, really?
You do know that I ran 24 hours on a Triumph on my own. So that
yes, I know that.
7.5 Daytona is just mental.
Oh, I've had two of those.
It's got a very, 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 very good place in my heart.
I've had 2 6.75s. Oh, I love it. I've had the Street Triple, the earlier model with the round lights, and then I had the 6.75, the Daytona 2009 model, just before the Quick Shifter and the R model came out, and did a couple of Red Star stints on that. It's an absolute magic.
Around Red Star, there's nothing better than a Triumph. I can tell you that.
Love it. Are we going to get into it again?
even my 750 GSXR, which did a little bit quicker lap times, wasn't as comfortable and wasn't as fun to ride as the 675, that's for sure.
No, it's a magic bike. Absolutely love it. Yeah. You're going to make me buy a bike again. No, I want to get into car racing. No, I want to get into the triple one.
Just take Valentino Rossi saying, you know, four wheels moves the body, two wheels moves the soul.
That's true. That's very true.
You're right. Very true. Oh, yes.
Greg Maloney, what an absolute pleasure to talk to you on our show this morning. We're going to make this a more regular insert. We want to talk to you more often. Especially with the motorsports section. We usually talk about cars, passenger cars, road cars, that sort of stuff. So motorsports section, I relay what you say on air all the time. We might as well get it from you.
Absolute pleasure. Anytime you want to, gentlemen. Thank you so much for your time and thanks for giving me this opportunity.
Oh, awesome.
It's always great to chat to fellow petrol heads and motorsport fanatics. Take care then. Bye-bye now. 105, jou nummer 1 kusser in die Laanveld.